I always love that part. You guys, that's great. Okay, so this morning, I'm going to preach a sermon without slides. Sorry about that, for those that don't like them, but for those that are glad, somebody would be happy. It's going to be happy, right? And I want to do something I did similar about a year ago. I did a sermon where I told a Bible story first person. And I tried real hard to stay in first person. Sometimes jump in third person. I'd probably do it again today, but I'll try to do it first person. And I want to go back to an Old Testament story that takes up about 20% or so of the book of Genesis, and it starts in Genesis 37, and it's a story about a man named Joseph. And Joseph, just to kind of set the stage here, you remember that Abraham had a son named Isaac, who had a son named Jacob. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. Jacob had 12 sons, and his favorite one was Joseph. And there's a story of Joseph that takes up almost 15 chapters or so of the book of Genesis. Now, I want to kind of give you I'm going to try to stick pretty close to the scriptures in telling the story. I'm going to warn you ahead of time, I am going to speculate some about some things along the way. And to let you know what those are, whenever I start saying that as Joseph that I'm thinking something, but the Bible doesn't say what he doesn't tell us what he thought. When I start saying I'm thinking, maybe thinking something, I'm speculating, I'm guessing, okay? So that's not scripture. That's just David's opinion, okay? But all the rest of the story will be from the scripture, okay? So no, I'm telling you the story as it is in the Bible, except when I say maybe I was thinking this or maybe I was thinking that, and then you can say, well, David's just guessing about that, and that may be right or wrong, and who knows? But I think it adds to the story for me, and so I'm going to do it. And you either and Steve, I can get him to tag team with me on this because he and I studied this the other day in our class. We went through this, so he's the old hat to him, and he can do it. But I didn't do it in first person, did I? So this is different, a little bit different. Okay, so I'm going to tell the story, and you follow along with me. And one more thing I want to say about it before I tell the story, that is, this is a great, great story of God's providence. Okay. Sometimes we wonder if God's there, we wonder if God's paying attention, we wonder if God's involved in our life. Some people think unless they have miracles going every day or something, they don't know if God's around. I want to tell you, this whole story is done without any miracles at all, except for some dreams and interpretations of the dreams. Other than that, everything in the story is like ordinary, everyday events, but I think you'll agree with me as we go that God is clearly in every step of the way. Okay, and from that, I want us to think about God doing the same thing with us, that we can have God in our lives, even when we can't see that, we know that he's still behind the scenes working things out to his glory and for our benefit. So we're starting in Genesis 37, and I wanted to get a quotation or something here in a minute. So okay, all right, so... Let me start with the story then. My name is Joseph. My dad is Jacob. I've got a whole bunch of brothers at home. They don't like me very well. Now, the reason they don't like me very well is, number one, I'm dad's favorite. And it's clear to everybody that I'm dad's favorite. He's given me a coat of many colors to distinguish me from everybody else. And I can tell you, that doesn't go over very well in a family to have parents showing favorites. And besides the fact he gave me that coat, and it was clear to everybody that I was his favorite, one time I tattled on my brothers. They were doing something they shouldn't do, and I went and told about them, and they really didn't like that either. And then I had some dreams, and I shared the dreams with them. I had one dream about all these sheaves of wheat, and my sheaf, all the other sheaves around, bowed down to my sheaf. And then the sun, the moon, the stars all bowed down to my star. And my brothers figured out that I was talking about them bowing down to me. And they said, no way we're ever going to bow down to you. Maybe I shouldn't have told the story to them. Maybe I shouldn't have shared my dreams, but I it was a message from God, and I wanted them to know this was God's plan. Well, one day, my older brothers were out taking care of the sheep and some distance from home. And Dad said, Joseph, you go out and check on your brothers, see how they're doing. And so I did. I went out to the fields looking. I couldn't find them. I saw somebody out in the field and I asked him, have you seen my brothers? Do you know where they are? And he said, oh yeah, they've gone on to Dothan. I heard them, overheard them talking. They're going on to Dothan. So I went on to Dothan. And as I was coming over the hills and getting closer to Dothan, they saw me before I saw them. And they said, here comes the dreamer. And they said, let's kill him. We hate him anyway. Let's kill him. Well, Brother Reuben said, let's not kill him. We don't want blood on our hands. Let's just throw him in a pit and let him die down there. And then we won't be directly responsible for killing him. And we'll go home and tell Dad that something bad's happened to him. And so they agreed. Brothers agreed not to kill me. But instead, when they saw me, they grabbed me, they ripped my coat off, and they threw me down into a dry well. Then they sat down to eat. And they ignored my pleas. Please, please, let me up. I was begging them to let me out. And they wouldn't. And they just sat down and ate their meal. And while they were eating, some Midianite, Ishmaelite merchants came along, traveling toward Egypt. And we thought, hey, we could turn this into... They thought, maybe we can turn this into a profitable thing. Instead of killing him, why don't we just sell him? Then we'll have some money in our hands and we'll be rid of him and all that. And so they did. Now, when Reuben wasn't around to protect me, see, Reuben had him throw me in the pit, hoping to come back and rescue me later and send me back to Dad. But when he came back, I was gone. Because Judah had come up with the story of, why don't we sell him for 20 shekels of silver? So they did. Now, here I was, 17 years old, far away from home, sold as a slave by my brothers who had just wanted to kill me and hated me. And now I'm listening to people talk. I can't understand what they're saying. I don't know any of their customs. I don't know any of their ways. And I'm a slave being carried down to Egypt. And there, they're going to sell me as a slave. 17 years old, ripped away from family, don't understand the language, don't know the customs. Everything is strange. Has God forgotten me? Has God forgotten me now? Where is God in all this? You know, as I'm traveling toward Egypt, I'm looking over my shoulder from time to time thinking, okay, the joke's gone on long enough. Come on, brothers, come back and rescue me. Come back and buy me back. And I got the point. I get it. Now, come back and rescue me. But they didn't. But I comforted myself with the fact that Dad was a rich, powerful man. And when he finds out what happened to me, and you find out what these guys have done, he'll be down there to buy me back and bring me back home again. So I get to Egypt, and I'm sold to the head of Pharaoh's security force, his soldiers, his arm, I might say his secret service. And I'm taken to his house, and he has a nice house, lots of servants and all. And I work really hard and do a really good job managing things in the house till eventually he says, Potiphar doesn't even know anything going on in the house except for the food that's put in front of him at night at the dinner table. Joseph's now in charge of everything. And though I might wonder whether God has forgotten me, how could God let this happen to me? I learned later that the Lord was with me and gave me success in everything I did. And so I became the head over Potiphar's household and took care of everything in the house. Now, the only one the Bible ever says, only man the Bible ever says this about is, well, I was very handsome, very comely. And Mrs. Potiphar took note of that. And she invited me to commit adultery, come sleep with her. But I said no. I said, Potiphar, entrust me with everything in the house, put everything in my control. The only thing he's held back from me is you. So how could I do this great wickedness and sin against God? You see, I still trusted God in spite of everything, didn't I? Now, it'd be real easy to reason as a 17-year-old kid, long ways from home, nobody knows you, nobody knows will see anything, nobody will ever know. It could help me in my status. It could help me in move ahead in success in life. Really makes a lot of sense to listen to his father. She's a lot of things she could do to me if I don't. So but I have integrity, and character, godliness. And says, no, I could not do this to Potiphar. No, I could not do this and sin against God. And no, I will not sin, even as a 17-year-old teenage boy. And I thought that was pretty good. And I was glad I did it. And things are okay, but Potiphar, she didn't quit very easy. She didn't give up. Every day, she offered again. Every day, every chance she had, she gave another proposition. I tell you what I did. I just stayed as far away from her as possible. I tried to always keep away from her, not be with her, not be around her. But one day, I was in the house doing some work, and none of the other men were around, and she caught me. And she grabbed me by the coat and said, come on, come on, come lie with me. And I tell you what, I got out of there as fast as I could. I left my coat behind and ran out of the house naked, just got away from her. Well, she was highly offended by that. And she called all the men in and said, look, he's brought this Hebrew in here to mock us and to ridicule us, laugh at us. Look at what he's done. He came in here and tried to rape me. I screamed for help and then he ran. And look, here's the evidence. I got his coat right here. Well, she held on to it till her husband got home from work. And when he got home, she told the same story. And he became angry. Now, I'm not sure he really believed his wife all that much because he didn't have me killed. He just put me in prison. But where's God in all this? I do what's right. I do what's moral. I do what's godly. I do what I'm supposed to do. And look what happens. I get thrown in jail. How is God in any of this? Yet I learned later that God was with me and gave me great success in what I did, because very quickly I rose to be the chief trustee in the jail. Pretty soon I was in charge of the whole prison, except for what the warden did. One day, there were two notorious prisoners brought in. You see, this was the king's prison, for the king's servants that were arrested. And two prominent people were brought in. One was the cupbearer of Pharaoh, the one who would be the food taster, the one that would be the secretary of state, the one that's closest advisor for him. And then the chief baker. And both of them, Pharaoh got mad at them, threw them both in jail. And they were there for a while. And then one day I walked in and I noticed those guys had a really, really particularly sad face on that day. And I said, what's going on? What are you upset about? And they said, oh, we've had dreams. We've had dreams. We don't know what they mean. Nobody here to interpret. We don't know what they mean. And they put a lot of stock in those dreams and what they would mean. So I told them, God can interpret dreams. Let me tell me your dreams and let's see what we can do. And the cupbearer told me his story first. And he said he had a vine growing up, and all these grapes sprouted out on it. And I took some of those grapes, and I squeezed them into a cup, and I handed them to Pharaoh. And Joseph said, I said to them, well, that means in 3 days, you're going to be restored to your position again. You'll be back where you were serving Pharaoh in his court. And it sounded really good to me, to him. And I said to him, when you get back restored to your position, would you tell Pharaoh that I don't belong here, I'm here unjustly, and help me get out of here? Sure he would, okay. Well, the baker was encouraged by the interpretation of the first dream. And he said, well, let me tell you my dream. I had 3 baskets of bread on my head, and the birds were up in the top basket eating it. And what does that mean? And he said, well, what that means is in 3 days, Pharaoh's going to hang you and the birds are going to eat your flesh. That wasn't as good a story, was it? And you know what? It happened exactly as I said it would. 3 days later, Pharaoh had a birthday, brought those two back, hung the baker, and restored the cupbearer. But the cupbearer forgot all about me. He didn't say anything. He didn't say anything to Pharaoh about me. So for 2 more years, I languished in prison. And what kind of gratitude is that? And where's God in all that? Why isn't God helping me in any of these things? Well, Pharaoh had a couple of dreams. And he was bothered by them. Didn't know what they meant. Nobody could tell him what they meant. And what was he going to do? Ah. Then the cupbearer said, wait a minute, I remember my failings. I remember my wrongdoing. I told this guy in prison that interpreted our dreams exactly the way they turned out, that I was going to remember him, and I didn't. So, but he could interpret dreams. So Pharaoh called for me, had me shaved and haircut and bath and clean set of clothes on, brought in here in front of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said, I hear you can interpret dreams. And I said, God interprets dreams. But if you tell me what your dream is, we'll see if God will give you the answer. And so he told me the dreams. He told me about this five fat cows that come out of the Nile River. And then there's seven fat cows, followed by seven skinny cows who eat the seven fat cows and stay skinny. And then there was seven ears of corn that were really fat, and they were consumed by these seven skinny ears of corn, and they didn't get any bigger. What's it all mean? And I said, well, the two dreams are really one. There's only one story here. And that is, there's going to be 7 years of plenty, bumper crops, followed by 7 years of extreme famine. And what you need to do is save up as much of that from the first 7 years as you can, so that in the seven lean years, you'll have something to eat and won't starve. And Pharaoh said, can we find anybody with the Spirit of God who can do what we need done to rescue us from all this trouble coming? Joseph, how about you? And I agreed to do it. And he put a ring on my hand, and he gave me a chariot, and he put me in a high position, and I was second only to Pharaoh himself. Pharaoh told me that only in sitting on the throne would he be greater than me. So I got to work like I always did, and the Lord was with me and gave me success. And during the 7 years of plenty, I saved 20% and put it away in the storehouses. And finally, when those 7 years were over, we had huge stockpiles of food, and then the famine started. And the people started getting hungry. And they wanted something to eat. And they came to us to say, we need food. And guess what? I had food. And I sold it to them until their money ran out. Then they came back and said, we don't have any more money. What are we going to do about food? And he said, sell me your livestock. I said, sell me your livestock. And they did that. Then they ran out of livestock, and they came back and said, we're going to die of starvation. What are we going to do? We don't have anything else to give. And I said, sell yourselves to us as slaves for Pharaoh. And you know what? It wasn't long until everybody in Egypt belonged to Pharaoh, and everything belonged to Pharaoh. But the problem wasn't limited to Egypt. This was a regional problem, a worldwide problem of starvation and famine. And all the way up there in Canaan was Jacob and his family, and they were starting to get hungry too. And they heard there was food down in Egypt. So Dad sends all the brothers down to Egypt to get some food. Well, when they arrived, they didn't recognize me, but I recognized them. I knew exactly who they were. And they may have thought, well, this guy looks a little bit like our old brother Joseph, but it's been 13 years now. I'm 30 years old now. And they don't reckon I look different and everything's different. They don't expect that to be me. And I treat them pretty roughly. To be honest with you, I treat them pretty mean. I said, you're spies. You've come in here to spy out the naked of this land. You've come here to plan to do us harm. Well, they protested and said, no, we're not. No, we're not. We're all brothers. We're all here. And you know, I think what they were trying to indicate to me was, who's going to send 12 or 10 of their sons down for a spy mission, knowing what could happen to spies when they're caught? They're not going to send all their kids down like that. And he asked us questions, and he said, so there's just 10 of you? No, there's two more. One's gone, and the other's still home with Dad. And I had something going on in my mind that I was thinking about what I could do with these guys, because I didn't like my brothers much. They've been mean to me. I was really hoping to get rid of them. And so I had to come up with a plan. to get rid of these guys and never see them again. So I told them, you're all going to stay in jail. One of you go back and get your brother and bring him down here. Prove to me that you're not spies. Well, we find that after 3 days, I said, I'll tell you what. Keep Simeon. I didn't keep Reuben, the oldest, in jail because I found out from them talking. He says, we're getting rewarded for what we've done. I told you not to kill him. I was going to rescue him, send him back home, but you sold him before I got there. So I knew that Reuben was not the worst one of them. So I kept Simeon, the second oldest, in jail and sent the rest home and said, you will not see my face again unless you bring your younger brother here. So they went home, and when they opened their bags of grain, all their money was on top of the grain. They thought, oh no, God's getting us now because the money's missing and it's going to look like we stole this and we're in big trouble. Went home and told Dad about this, and he said, we're going to have to go back later and take that money back and give it to him. But anyway, they said, we've got to take Benjamin down there with us. Joseph's only full-blooded brother. We've got to take him back down there with us, or he's not going to see us again. I'm not sending him. No, we're not sending him. I've already lost Joseph. Now I've lost Simeon. Now you're going to take Benjamin down there. I'm going to be bereaved of all my children. No, can't do it. Well, eventually they ran out of food again, and they needed to come down. But Dad wouldn't let us go. Well, Reuben said, listen, I'll be responsible for the boy. I'll bring him back. If I don't bring him back, you can kill my sons. They said, we can't get any food. We're not going unless you send Benjamin with us. And Dad said, okay, if I'm bereaving my kids, I'm bereaving my kids. And Benjamin came down. Well, when I saw Benjamin, that was the most exciting thing that had happened in many, many years. I said, is this your youngest brother? Is this Benjamin? He said, yes. And he hugged him. And he hugged all the others. And now, us Egyptians weren't allowed to eat with shepherds. We hated shepherds. But I decided to have them have lunch with me at my expense. And they were frightened, a little afraid. And we put food in front of all of them, except in front of Benjamin. We gave him 5 times as much as everybody else. Everybody's got a plate, and he's got 5 plate loads there in front of him. And we packed up their food, their bags of grain, as much as they could carry, put the money back in the tops of the bags again, and took my silver cup and put it in Benjamin's bag and sent him on home. After they'd gotten out of town a little ways, I sent one of my right-hand men over there to go stop them and say, hey, what's the big idea? Stealing from my master? What's the big idea? Stealing his cup? We didn't do that. Not us. We didn't do anything like that. We're honest men, and so forth. See, my plan was, I'm getting rid of these guys. And they said, whoever you find the cup with, let him be put to death, and the rest of us go back as your slaves. And my servant said, no, whoever has the cup will go back as my slave, and the rest of you go home. And you see the plan I have? I'm going to keep Benjamin down there with me, and I'm sending the rest of them home never to see him again. Well, we open the bags, and right there in Benjamin's bag is that cup. And we say, we're taking Benjamin back, and the rest of them wouldn't go home. They came back. They're different people than they were before. No, we can't let this happen. They follow him back to come see me. And they fall on me, my mercy, and beg me to please let somebody else, Judah, volunteers to take the place of Benjamin so that Dad won't be bereaved of that son. And at that point, I could stand it no further.
I broke down and cried, and I confessed to them that I was their brother. Now, can you imagine how they felt and what they thought when they found out the brother they had wanted to kill and the one they sold into slavery is now in charge of their future? I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. I saw the hand of God in what had happened. What they did was wrong, but I saw the hand of God in him sending me down here. You see, If I wasn't in Egypt, how could I have saved their lives? If I wasn't in Egypt, how could I have fed them from the famine? If I wasn't in Egypt, if I wasn't in jail, how would Pharaoh have found me to come interpret the dreams and put me in that position? If he had let me go before, I'd been long gone, and who knows. Now, there's one thing in the story. You know, I got married. They gave me an Egyptian wife from one of the priests there. And Asenath was her name. And my name was changed as well to Zaphnath-Paneah, married to her. And I had two sons. The first son was Manasseh, the firstborn. And I named him that because God has made me forget all my hardship and my father's house. I'm no longer thinking about home, no longer want to go home. This is home. I'm done with that family. I'm done with Canaan. I've forgotten all my past and my family. And then the other son was named Ephraim, for God hath made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. The land I'm afflicted in, I've become successful in, and I'm going to stay here and raise my family. I'm going to get rid of this previous family and be done with them. But now, I see my brothers have changed. They're not who they were. They're not the same brothers that sold me. Things have changed. And I'm breaking down and crying. And I'm confessing to them I'm a brother. And they were terrified by this. But I told them, don't hold this against yourself. God was saving our lives. Well, we sent for the dad and all the rest of the family and brought them down to and received the best of the land of Goshen, the land of the Nile Delta, to raise sheep. And came down, 70 of us came down together. Well, to cut the story short here, we continue for the 7 years of famine with me administrating and taking care of everybody and making sure that people in the world got to eat. But then Dad decided he was getting old enough, he was about to die, getting sick and about to die, and he wanted to bless my two sons. So I brought in Manasseh and Ephraim, and put his right hand on Manasseh's head and his left hand on Ephraim's head. And he switched them. And was going to give the right hand blessing to the younger son. I said, no, Dad, no, that's wrong. It's the other way around. He says, I know. But we're going to do it this way because God almost always did that, didn't he? He didn't take the firstborn. He took somebody else usually and blessed those sons. And then he took all of his sons and blessed them and told what their future would hold. Finally, Dad dies. He wanted to be buried back in the cave of Machpelah, back where Sarah and Abraham and others were buried. And we took him back there. Big, big contingent of Egyptians went back to do that. And he was buried. And then we find that when he's dead, my brothers come in and send messages saying, please, please, Dad said while he was alive, please don't get revenge. Please don't get even with them. You see, they didn't believe that I'd forgiven them, did they? They were waiting for Dad, thought I was waiting for Dad to die, and then I was going to get them. But I said, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones. Thus I comforted them and spoke kindly to them. And then I asked them that when I died, that they would take my body up to the promised land and bury me in the land that God had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So I died at 110 years old. That was the end. Oh, it was 130. I think it was 130. At 130, died, and that was my life. Well, they did eventually, when they left the promised land on the Exodus, did take my body with them, and they did bury it in the promised land as I had asked them to do. But what I ask you to think about today in telling my story, as recorded in the book of Genesis, God is always there. God is always at work, even behind the scenes in his providence, caring for us, blessing us, and giving us success. If we have faith and trust in him and continue to do what we ought to do, he will take care of us. He did with me. He did with you. So later, the Apostle Paul would end up saying all things work together for good to those that love God and are called according to his purpose. My life shows how that works. I hope it helps you in your faith with him. We've got a song, What Can Wash Away My Sins? That's the blood of Jesus, I think it is. Phil's going to lead us in.
If you need to respond to the gospel today, if you need to obey Jesus and put him on in baptism, repenting of your sins, confessing your faith in him, we'd love to assist you and help you with that as we stand to sing the song and announce.
What can wash away my sins? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. What can make